So basically, I'm going to talk in such a way that those who are not that familiar with Krishna consciousness, because I think some of you may not be that familiar, will become a little acquainted with the concept of guru. And those who are acquainted, then we're going to speak a little bit about the qualities of guru. All right, so first of all, let's talk about what Vyasa Puja means. Vyasa Puja is named after a great personality named who? Vyasadeva. And the word Vyas means to divide. There's two words in Sanskrit. What's the other word? Does anyone know? Any experts here? No, Vyas and the opposite. Samas. Samas means put together. Vyas means to divide. So approximately 5,000 years ago, this great personality who is the incarnation of Krishna, one of the incarnations of Krishna, Shaktivesh, he divided the Vedas. The Vedas were originally one. And because people were getting to be a little less intelligent, getting to be like the cusp of the Kali Yuga, he divided into four. That's the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Tharva Veda, and Yajur Veda. And those Vedas are very interesting, and it relates very much to what many of you think and do. The Rig Veda is the Veda of sacrifices. That is mostly to the demigods. Anyone here ever worship a demigod? Yeah. Just Krishna Rupa. The rest of you have been worshiping Krishna. Okay. Krishna Rupa is the only one who... I don't believe it. I don't believe that she's the only one who ever worshipped a demigod. But anyway, you're all too embarrassed. But anyway, so... Then don't worry, I'm not going to use that verse, Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivata Samitvainaiva Vikshaita Sapashandi Bhavetruvam. I won't use that verse, and I'm not going to give you the translation to it either. But anyway, so you have the Rig Veda, and the Rig Veda is mostly like the different prayers of the demigods. Then you have the Sama Veda, which is like the musical portion. There's also prayers there. Yajur Veda, which is Swaha, Swaha, Swaha Veda. You understand? Yagyas. And then the Atharva Veda, which is very interesting because that's a lot of stuff like curses and black magic and weapons, you know, like the Brahmastra weapon and things like that's all in the Atharva Veda. It's interesting, isn't it? Just a little education for all of you who don't know the Vedic literature. So anyway, so he divided the Vedas into four. Then the problem was that people got really into ritualistic sacrifices, which is basically called karma kanja. That means they were doing these sacrifices and they were mainly interested in getting something for themselves rather than spiritual life. And they forgot that Krishna was God and Lord Vishnu was God, same person. Because they became entranced with the pushpa, the flowery words of the Vedas. You understand? Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nis Trigunya Bhavarjuna. As stated in the Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, don't become bewildered by the Vedas, which are mainly meant for dealing with the three modes of material nature. So, even though in the original Vedas there's so many verses that indicate that Vishnu is God. Om Tad Vishnu Param Param Pashanti Yat Suryaha. That verse is there. So they became bewildered. A little history, actually, it's history of religion in India. A little mini course we're going to give today. They became so bewildered. And then the brahmanas, they became puffed up. What do I mean by puffed up? That means they became proud. That puffed up word is not a word that you're all familiar with. Anyway, they became very, very proud, and they developed a monopoly on sacrifices. You know what a monopoly is? That means only us brahmanas could do sacrifices. If you want a baby puja, if you want namakarana, if you want marriage, if you want even die, you have to depend on us, on jyeshti. So, because they had the whole society within their grasp. And as we know, power corrupts, and what happens with absolute power? Does anyone know? It corrupts absolutely. So the Brahmanas, they were saying, and in order to be a Brahmana, you have to be born in a Brahmin family. That's another point. That's nothing like that is there in the Vedas. It doesn't state in the Vedas you have to be born in a Brahmin family, but it was good for business. Right? So that's why they had that. And so what happened then, people got a little rebellious. You know what happens when you get people who are too authoritative? Even parents, the children rebel, right? Anyone here ever have children? They rebel. There's something, with children, there's something called the terrible twos. Never heard of that before? That means at two, they start to say, hey, we're not going to listen to you anymore. So that not only happens between parents and children, it happens in society in general. So people started to think, hey, these guys are really exploiting us. And they're not teaching any knowledge. So what should we do? And the Brahmanas were controlling the city. So they thought, actually, we should head for the hills. And we're not talking about the Blue Mountains or Sydney. We're talking about the forests. So people went to the forests, and they were called Aranyakas. That means forest dwellers. And they developed their own literature, too. Their literature was first, of course, they had the Aranyaka literature, the special branch of Vedic literature, because we're talking about Vedas now. And then later on, they developed the Upanishads, which dealt with more philosophy. At the same time that they were rebelling, and they stayed within the Vedic system, they had people who left the Vedic system who rebelled, and they were called the Buddhists and the Jains. The Buddhists were, and the Jains rebelled because the Brahmanas not only had a monopoly, were making all the money from everybody, but they were engaged in animal slaughter. And so you see in the Buddhists and the Jains, mainly, they're interested in ahimsa, nonviolence. You see, Jains, they wear the masks to keep from breathing in the insects and the other little bugs. And the Buddhists, ahimsa, paramo dharma. And today, still, the Jains are also very much interested in ahimsa. And at least the Buddhists who follow the original Buddhist teachings are very much interested in ahimsa. So you had this whole rebellion. So Srila Vyasadeva, understanding all these things, compiled not only the four Vedas, then he compiled the Upanishads, which are the philosophical literatures. Does anyone know what Upanishad means? The word Upanishad? No? No one knows.
To be near.
To be near, yeah. Sit down and sit down. Veto in Hindi. Sit down and listen. You know, basically, the word doesn't mean all those things, but it's indirectly it indicates those things. Be near, come near. Because in order to understand the Upanishad, you have to approach a monkey? A teacher, a guru. There was a necessity. Okay. And then the Upanishads, in order to further explain the Upanishads, Srila Vyasadeva came out with the Vedanta Sutra, which is sometimes called the Brahma Sutra. And the Brahma Sutra is actually, and the Vedanta Sutra are actually commentaries on specific Upanishadic verses, which is really interesting. So, and then, later on, different acharyas in India, in order to explain the Vedanta, came out with commentaries on the Vedanta. This is the history of Indian religion, basically, I'm giving you. And those commentaries are the Bhashyas, like the Sri Bhashya by Ramanujacharya, and the Bhashya by Shankaracharya, Sri Rakya Bhashya. Now, we advise you not to read that one, because that one actually takes the indirect meaning of the Upanishads, and he tries to assert that there's only Brahman and everything else doesn't exist, which is kind of silly. The reason it's silly is because if they say there's only Brahman, then why are you thinking Or why are we thinking there's other things other than Brahman? And he says, well, that's because of Maya or illusion. But if there's only Brahman, what, how did you get Maya? Where'd that come from? He doesn't explain that. That's the problem with Mayavadi philosophy. He doesn't explain about Maya. You would think, you know, if you're going to present a philosophy called Mayavadi philosophy, you'd talk about where Maya came from. But he says, no, it's just, you're in Maya, but there's no Maya. That's pretty stupid, isn't it? Of course, he's not stupid, because he's Lord Shiva, who had a mission to bewilder people and also teach covered Buddhism to sort of bring people back to Hinduism or to the Vedic fold. But if you think about it, it's pretty illogical, right? There's only Brahman, but you're in Maya, but there's no Maya. Think about it for a second. If you do, and you're able to understand it, tell me. So, anyway, so that's Vyasadeva. And, of course, then, in addition to the commentaries on the Vedanta, then you have Vyasadeva's own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is called the what? Vyasadeva wrote a commentary on the Brahma Sutra. What is that? Srimad Bhagavatam. Pretty nice. And then in addition to that, you have Itihasas and Puranas. Itihasa means like the histories. Puranas means like the Srimad Bhagavatam. The other Itihasa means thus it happened or something like that. And Purana means old. Itihasa, we have Itihasas like the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. Those are the two main Itihasas. So that's Vyasadeva. I wanted to explain who Vyasadeva was. So, of course, Vyasadeva, his intention is and was always to bring people to Krishna. But in order to bring people to Krishna, he had to become the original bridge preaching person. You know what bridge preaching is? Bridge preaching means you can't directly tell everybody surrender to Krishna. You have to give people a sweet ball, just like we have sweet balls here. And like Prabhupada said, if someone takes a Simply Wonderful, he comes to the temple, that Simply Wonderful becomes a devotee, he'll become Simply Wonderful. So that's bridge preaching right there. Or another way to explain it in Sanskrit is agyata sukriti. That means someone is engaged in spiritual advancement without him or her knowing it. Agyata sukriti. So Vyasadeva was very expert in that. So therefore, that's why you have all this other stuff that doesn't apparently have any direct connection with Krishna consciousness, like the four Vedas, etc., like that. And that's why people look at the original four Vedas, and if they count the number of times that different entities, demigods, are worshipped, Indra wins. Did you know that? Like if you do a poll, how many times is Indra mentioned? Indra gets the most mentions. And the reason for that is not that Indra is God, because very few people worship Indra nowadays. Anybody here ever worship Indra? No. No, mostly worshiping Durga, just like we recently had Durga Puja, right? Right? The gopis, they worship Durga. Very interesting story. The gopis, they worship Durga for 1 month. And at the end of the month, guess what happened? They were taking a bath, they were naked, and Krishna stole their clothes. That's what happens when you worship Durga. Kachayani brat. That's right. So, it doesn't work that way for the men, don't worry about it. For the man, Krishna takes everything away, so you have to surrender to him. He doesn't take just your clothes away, he takes everything else. Yes, Yahamari Grinami, Horeshe Tadanam Shanat. Anyway, so let's get back to the point. So if you take counts of the original Vedas, Indra gets the most worship. But it's not that Indra is the supreme god. It's just like in the government, you approach a lower echelon, a low person in the lower realm of the government rather than a higher realm. I mean, nobody here approaches the prime minister of this country, do they? When you want a driver's license. That'd be pretty stupid, you know. you approach someone who's in an office and you just give him some money and you take the test and he has to give you your license. So that's Indra. That's it in a nutshell. And actually, as devotees, we just worship Krishna. And if Indra gets angry that we didn't pay him his money, too bad. He lifts Govardhan Hill and protects us, right? Like you see, Giriraj up here. So, anyway, so that's Vyasadeva. So Vyasa Puja means the worship of the representative of Vyasadeva. But the representative of Vyasadeva is not someone who is teaching Karmakanja conceptions, is not someone who is teaching Gyanakanda conceptions, is not someone who's teaching we're all God, you're God, I'm God, worship me, but is someone who is teaching the purpose or the reason that Vyasadeva came out with all the Vedic literatures. As Krishna says in the Gita, Vedaish chasavera ham eva vejo. By all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. So someone who teaches that and dedicates his life to that is the representative of Vyasadeva. And he or she, we have to be equal nowadays. We got to be careful. Or, I'm sorry, she or he. You know. I apologize. Anyway, so the ladies here. She or he is given respect on their appearance day in the Vedic calendar, which differs according to the Roman calendar each year. And they are accepting that as Vyasadeva's representative, not as an individual separate from Vyasadeva or the disciplic succession. And they are accepting it like the tax collector accepts taxes for the government. He doesn't put any in his own pocket, but he gives it to the government. So that's what Vyasa Puja is. It's also very interesting. In some places in India, they don't actually do the Vyasa Puja. They have one day a year where they have the worship the Guru. What is that called? Guru Purnima. Right? And they worship the Guru on that day. But it's also interesting that, yes, the Guru is one in one respect. That all gurus, bona fide gurus, are teaching the same thing. Now that's an interesting word, bona fide. There's many bogus gurus, although that's a contradiction, who are teaching something different. If you hear someone say, I'm God, then you know he's gotten his spelling wrong. He has dyslexia. You understand dyslexia? He just got the G-O-D, he should just change it to D-O-G, and then he has it right. Right? He needs to take some Ritalin. You understand? They give people with dyslexia or something like that, or for attention deficit disorder. So in this Guru Purnima, there is the understanding that Guru is teaching the same thing, but also Guru has a separate personal identity. Just like we have teachers in the university or teachers in the school who are all teaching mathematics, and obviously they're following the same curriculum, right? But they're different persons. They're not all the same person. So this is part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So the Guru is an individual. So we approach him individually on his appearance day. But still, we approach him as a representative of the disciplic succession. So both things have to be taken into consideration. It's a balance. It's neither one way nor the other. Neither is he God, or neither is he just one, and this doesn't matter which guru you have or anything like that. One and different simultaneously. So that's basically the meaning of Vyasa Puja. Now, for those of you who want a little something deeper, what should you do about Vyasa Puja? Well, you should sit here. Anyway, so sit here and get your checkbooks out. No, sorry. I'm just joking. But anyway, what should you do about it? How can you serve the guru in disciplic succession? What is the best service that one can do? The best service, Krishna says in the Gita, is what? Anyone know? Yeah. He who preaches this message is dear to me. There will never be anyone more dear to me than he or she who preaches this message. So really, if one wants to please the Guru, like we see in the case of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, he was given the mission by his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to preach in English, basically go to the Western world and preach in English. And he took this order to heart, and therefore he became most dear. He was most dear to his spiritual master. That is the best service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says himself, he said to the South Indian Brahmin, Kurma, he said, Yari de katari kara Krishna upadesha maragai guru hoi tore desh. The service you should do for me is not simply follow me around like a shadow, because this is what he wanted to do, this Kurma Brahmin. He wanted to leave his home, family, everything, and just follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's real. It was ecstatic. It is ecstatic to follow Lord Chaitanya. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I would be tempted that if Lord Chaitanya, you know, started driving away in the car, I'd go right after him. And he would probably say, sit there and give the class. I'd say, no, no, I want to follow you. But anyway, so this brahmana, he wanted to follow Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, stani sita shudikatam tan ban manobir. Just stay where you are and chant and preach Krishna. And yari dakatari kar Krishna padesha maragai guru hoi tori desh. Become guru. So if we want to please in the best way the disciplic succession and our spiritual master, we should become gurus too. That doesn't mean big seat. Not that everyone has to sit on a big seat. It's not, you know, it's not ecstatic to sit on a big seat. You know, I was just sitting on a big seat last night, stayed up till 12 o'clock or something, drove 100 kilometers, and then drove another 100 kilometers at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, it's a little challenging. Anyway, so, but being guru means heavy with spiritual knowledge and being able to bring people to Krishna consciousness with, and here's the key, compassion. That's the real trick. You know, it's one sense it's easy to have spiritual knowledge. You just read and you memorize. But that's not vijnana. Jnana is easy. Anybody can do it. Tape recorder can do it. Computer can do. Right? You just go into your Veda base and say, you know, what's a good shlok for this particular occasion? That's really not vijnana. And that's not compassion. So vijnana, the essential aspect of vijnana for those who want to help others be Krishna conscious is compassion. And compassion means para dukkha dukhi, thinking of others as more important than yourselves. And that's a hard one. That's really hard. It's like you see so many conflicts in the world today, you see exactly the opposite happening. People think of others as nothing, right? As if they just put labels on them. You're just an infidel, kafir, or we say, what, demon, rakshasa. We got a lot of nice words. A big vocabulary. Isn't it? Can anyone think of any other words? Karmi, idiot. Like that. You know, we're very expert. I think we have more negative words than any other culture in the world, because we have a very elaborate philosophy, so we've got to have more negative words too. So. You know, it makes sense. So yeah, namam duskrutino mudha, that's another nice word. Prapajante naradama, there's another nice word. Asuram bhava mashrita, another nice word. So, you know, we can speak all night about that. But really, paradukha dukhi, compassion, means basically you put yourself in the other person's shoes. Or you exercise your imagination. There was one Indian saint who, he wasn't a devotee, but I like this quote anyway. He said, people fight because of a failure of imagination. Mm-hmm. Interesting, isn't it? think about it for a second. In other words, you don't put yourself in other people's shoes. You don't role play, so to speak. So that's why you hate people, because you're actually thinking of them as its rather than a person. Even one famous Western philosopher would talk about I and thou. Anyway, some of you who have studied Western philosophy or European philosophy may know what I'm talking about. Martin Buber. Anyway, so we have to see people as people. That may sound kind of funny, see people as people. But we're not seeing people as people. We're seeing people as its. And so when we approach people, we should see, even if they're acting in a way that apparently is inimical to us, that is causing their suffering. And if we become hateful to them, we are causing our own suffering. And we're not helping them, certainly. And we're not serving Krishna. A devotee, yastu sarvani bhutani atmane bhana pashati, sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona vigigupshate. That's the Upanishad. Doesn't hate anyone or hate anything because he sees everyone connected to Krishna. A particle, part and parcel of Krishna. So, this is the point. To see everyone as a person. And to see everyone who is not Krishna conscious, to the degree they're not Krishna conscious, as suffering because of their lack of Krishna consciousness. And you suffer because of your lack, he suffers because of his lack. So in this way, you find devotees like Haridas Thakur, who was being hit, tortured in so many marketplaces. He was compassionate, feeling compassionate for those who were hitting him. And that's Vaishnava. Kripa Sindhu. Kripa Sindhu means not just full of compassion, he's an ocean of compassion. So if we can develop this, of course, developing it, that's another subject matter. How do you develop it? Associate with those who have it. Chant the holy names. Follow the process with your heart, not just externally, not just ritualistically. Then you'll develop that compassion. Then you'll be qualified to be guru, and you'll be able to control your senses, too. If you can't control your senses, you can't be guru. But you'll be able to control your senses when you're compassionate towards others. That's the essential part of controlling the senses. Now, I'll give you one example of my own life, and I'm not bragging or anything, but this is just one thing I do. Like, for example, my diet, I have a very restricted diet. The reason I do that is not because I want to get power so I can curse people. float in the air or something like that. It's because I'm thinking, in this way, I'll be able to live longer to help people. So if everything's positive like that, then austerities come natural. That's the point I'm making. Austerities are secondary. But if you're positive about compassion, then all the impediments that may arise in the progress of devotional service will quickly be eradicated. So that's what I'm asking each and every one of you to do today. This is the best presentation you can make for me. You all become compassionate, chant nicely, associate especially with His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and other great devotees, and become gurus. Everyone here is supposed to become a guru. Because otherwise, how will the movement be spread? How will the world be changed? Otherwise, it'll simply be arithmetic. That means one person devotees, two people devotee, three people devotee. But it should be exponential. For those of you who know mathematics know what I'm talking about. Like 3 times 3 is 9, times 3 is 27, right? And then you keep multiplying by 3 and you get to the whole world after a few times. Another point about the whole world, if we're preaching Krishna consciousness, you want to make the whole world Krishna conscious? Very interesting fact that you're never more than 7 steps away from anybody in the whole world. Did you know this? 7 steps. I don't mean walking. That means if you know someone and he has a whole group of friends, and each one of that group of friends has a group of friends, and each one of that group of friends has a group of friends, and each one of those group of friends has a group of friends, you got everybody in the whole world after 7 steps. So if we reach out and we not only help people become Krishna conscious, but we help people become gurus or teachers in their own right, the whole world becomes Krishna conscious. But if we just wanted to keep the guru business to ourselves, like the brahmanas, we talked about the ritualistic brahmanas, you know, I keep it to myself, no more, nobody else becomes guru. I like sitting here. It's comfortable. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is not accomplished. Okay, I spoke too long. I didn't adhere to the schedule, I'm sorry. So, thank you very much. So now we'll go on. Right? All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.
So what do we all have to remember? To be compassionate.
He's a good teacher. He just reviews.
Everybody. Now it is time for...